There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
We've got Rod Hunt with us on the line. Before we put him through to you, let's introduce him properly.
Roderick Hunt, the creator of the famous characters Biff, Chip, Kipper, Floppy and their friends, has brought more than 400 Oxford Reading Tree stories to life. His first published stories were those he told his two sons at bedtime. Together with Alex Britcher, he won the prestigious Outstanding Achievement Award at the Education Resources Awards in 2009. He also received a British MBE for services to education, in particular literacy, in 2008. In February 2015, he received the inaugural Outstanding Achievement Award from Renaissance Learning's What Kids Are Reading annual survey of more than 500,000 school children. Hunt lives in Oxfordshire in a house not unlike the one in the Magic Key Adventures.
Hi Rod, how are you?
Good morning Annabelle, very well thank you.
Good morning. You're coming to Dubai in March. I just want to ask what you're most looking forward to about the festival.
Well, we're looking forward to, first of all, to meeting everybody there and of course going to visit see the children in the schools who are going to come to our sessions and tell them more about our extraordinary characters Biff, Chip, Kipper and Floppy the dog and so on.
Well, speaking of Biff,
and of course getting to see Dubai.
And then getting to see Dubai, of course. Biff, Chip and Kipper, now we've had a flood of questions come in for you about the Oxford Reading Tree series. First of all, Isabel Abelhall, the festival director, sent this question in. She said, you know, when did you first think up the Biff, Chip and Kipper series? And also the characters, Yvette Judge wants to know if they're actually based on children that you knew.
Not really. They're based on my own children when they were smaller. And many of the family adventures that we had were based on things that happened to me and my children in the family. And the house I live in Abingdon is very like the house that they live in ultimately, which has the magic key bedroom in it, where Biff has her magic key house and all the adventures that take place there. But they're a kind of combination of all kinds of children, and I was a teacher for 20 years, and so lots of adventures like the one where Wilf kicks off his shoe into the water on a school outing was an actual happening to me and when I was taking a party of children to London once. So they're based on a kind of amalgam of lots and lots of children and my own rather fertile imagination as well, of course.
So the Oxford Reading Tree series is used to teach children of all ages and reading abilities with the same set of characters. And how easy or difficult is it to come up with stories that target a particular age group? Do you think of an age group before you start writing? How does that process work?
Well, that's interesting. Yes, I do write for quite small children, so I reckon to be writing for the age of the child who might be reading that particular story. Although I try to make them fairly wide-ranging in their appeal. So although they are based and aimed at a particular age, you know, about 4 to 8 or 9 year olds, that's the range to which they're aimed, they do, I hope, have a kind of universal appeal, which of course Alex and I incorporate in our sessions together. We put in little bits of humour in the illustrations to give them a little bit of interest for the adult who reads it with them.
You're a co-creator of this with Alex as well. So he is in charge of the illustrations and you're in charge of story. How does that relationship work? Do you work together on these books or do you work separately?
Yes, I write the story first and I write a kind of storyboard, a description of how I see the picture. I have a very visual mind, so I actually see the pictures in my mind's eye. So I create the story by seeing a series of pictures very visually, and I try and write then the text, the words that go with that, the story itself, plus an art brief for Alex. And that's sent to schools to be trialed and or sent to the editors to look at as well and edited. And when that process is finished, Alex and I meet up at Oxford with our editor and designer, and then he does the sketches, the rough sketches, for the finished artwork. And in that process, I might well change the text slightly because he'd say, well, let's look at it from a different angle, or let's do this. And so I then fit the text quite fluid, I fit it to the illustration a little bit. And in doing that process, we have a hugely amusing time. We laugh a lot. And often the humour of the story is built into at that time.
Did you ever imagine the success that you two would have?
No idea. I started writing it in 1984 or 5, I suppose, for a limited market, really. And my editor, Mike, said it'll probably last about 8 years. If you're lucky, you know, the shelf life of stuff is about 8 years. And here we are 30 years later, still going, still writing stuff for it. So I had no concept it would be so successful, really. Not at all.
You certainly proved him wrong. 8 years, 30.
That's right, yeah.
You mentioned the universal appeal of the stories earlier. And the Oxford Reading Tree books used to teach reading in about 80% of UK primary schools. That's the figure that I came across. What is it about them, do you think, that has captured the nation's imagination and made it go from a predicted 8 years to 30 years of success?
Well, first of all, we're always updating them, and we're constantly bringing new stories, new material into the series. And we're also moving with the pedagogy of the time. So it has a sort of a second body of work, which is the phonics. So we now went from a sort of multi-cue approach, when the children looked at the pictures and predicted what the text might say based on the illustration, so prediction and learning the way the syntax of the sentence fell, to now the phonic approach. So it's had two lives, really, same characters, but two completely different approaches in the way it teaches children to read. But the characters themselves, it's a bit like a soap opera, I suppose, a bit like a kind of family you get to know, and you start to understand their foibles and their idiosyncrasies. And you can predict what they're going to do, how they're going to react. So Dad, who's always a bit clumsy and a bit of a joker, you know a little bit about him. You have the background, his backstory. And so that, I think, helps to imprint the characters on the minds of the reader, this kind of familiarity. And that's quite useful in some ways, because the children who learn to read haven't got to get to know a new set of characters. They have that kind of intimate knowledge of them as they read them.
I suppose it feels familiar to them.
Yes, that's right, exactly.
One of my favourite reviews of the books is actually from a six-year-old who says, "I love Biff, Chip and Kipper so much, I named my pet stick insect after them." What's the what's the best response you've ever had from a reader or a teacher? And you can't use that one.
Well, I did have a teacher who didn't want to use the reading tree. Used it years ago. He didn't want to use it very much. She's a very, very formal teacher. Obviously, she'd been teaching the same way for many years, and all the school began to use the Oxford reading tree except her. She stuck to her method of teaching to read. And then she decided that one year she would change and do the Oxford reading tree and use it. And they said, "Gosh, look at this lady. She began she changed. She wore much brighter clothing and she was much happier because the children, of course, were responding to the fun of it." And she realized she hadn't got to be quite so strict. And she later told me it changed my life. So that's the biggest compliment I've ever had.
That's wonderful.
Someone said it changed my way of thinking as a teacher.
We've had a great question come in on the text line. Basically, whether it's hard keeping the stories up to date to reflect technology.
It is. We've got a thing called a camcorder in one story, which who knows what a camcorder is. We have very old-fashioned looking computers and things, you know, and so that's a tricky one. If you use technology, within a few years, it's out of date. And we also have a Sinclair computer, I think, somewhere still. Maybe it's not being published now, but there's that. And when you write them, you think, "Gosh, this is cutting-edge stuff here." And then you look back and you think, "Gosh, that's really dated now." Yes, it is a problem, that. The way around this, of course, is to update the illustrations, which is a hugely costly exercise, really.
One question that keeps coming up for you as well is basically how you learnt to read yourself. Like, was it a particular series? Do you remember a reading scheme that you had as a child?
Yes, I do. I remember it very well. And if you've got time for a very quick story, my aunt, Marion, gave me a book to read when I was about 6 and a half. Which was just print, and I couldn't read it. And she rather scathingly said to me, "Can't you read yet, Roderick?" And I was so sort of humiliated in front of all my relations, my aunts and uncles, that when I got back to school, I thought, I must crack reading. I'm not a very good reader. And I was reading this book called, I saw this book from the Beacon series, they were called the Beacon books, they were called, of the Billy Goat's Gruff. And I saw this sentence, trip, trap, trip, trap, over the rickety bridge. And I realized the funny shape was rickety, and trip and trap was repeated. So I gathered that was the way the sentence fell, trip, trap, over the rickety bridge. And I realized there was a syntax, a logic to sentences, and then my reading took off at that point. What had really happened to me at the age of 6 and a half was I was ready to start reading. And one fact which I think we don't take enough cognizance of these days is children are not always ready to read. It's a thing called reading readiness. And we tend to push children into reading far, far too quickly, when what we should be doing is enjoying the world of books and stories, and not necessarily making them read and focusing them on reading the sentence. It has to be an enjoyable and shared experience. So if a child's not making very much progress at the age of 5, don't worry, you know, they're going to read later. It's the thing you shouldn't get anxious about. And I was a good case, my own experience was a great good case in point. And I've always had it in my mind about how you learn to read. It's an individual thing, and you learn at different times of your life. You learn at different stages of your infanthood. You learn, maybe you can start reading at 3, or maybe you can't, like me, at 6. So reading readiness is very important, I think.
I think that's a wonderful note to leave this conversation on. That's all we've got time for. Thank you so much for sparing the time to chat to us on Talking of Books, Rod.
Thank you very much, indeed.
Okay.
Look forward to seeing you.
See you in March.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.